Welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Hume, and I'm here to take you through the very latest news and views, hints, tips, and tricks to help you on your property journey. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. Thanks very much for downloading us and tuning in. It's the 21st of November, 2022, and we've had the autumn statement from Jeremy Hunt. Well, what does it mean? Well, there's not a lot in there of good news, is there? But we expected that. It's also not as bad as it could have been. I'm referring, of course, to the big change for those of you that are buy-to-let investors, capital gains tax. Capital gains tax is payable, was payable before the budget on 18% for a lower rate taxpayer on any gain, and for a higher rate taxpayer, 28%. Huge amounts of money, I know. There was some fear that they were going to align those with tax rates, which would mean the highest rate going as far as 40 or 45%, but they haven't. That's the good news. The bad news is they've done away with the allowance, or they're gradually doing away with it. What he announced was that the capital gains tax allowance, which is currently $12,600, is going to be reduced to $6,000 next year and then $3,000 the year after. Now, we calculated some numbers for you just so you can get a brief perspective on what that would mean for you. If you made a profit of £100,000 on the sale of a second home, and I should add that this does not apply to your principal home. In other words, the home that you live in, any capital gain is free of tax. We're only talking about investment properties where you've made a capital gain because you've rented them out, for instance, or maybe they're just vacant, but you've got a second property which you've invested in and you're selling on. That's a capital gain when it uplifts in value. And if you made £100,000 in that gain and you're a higher rate taxpayer, the tax bill under the old regime at 18% less your $12,600 allowance would have been $24,472 bill. And under the new rules, your bill would be $26,320. So there's a couple of thousand difference there this year for anyone selling a property. So yes, it's a lot of money, a couple of thousand. In the scheme of $100,000 gain, however, not that significant. Now, for a lower rate taxpayer, the bill would have been $15,732 under the old regime. Under the new regime, it's $16,920. So, of course, you can allow stamp duty fees, it's solicitor's fees, service charges, maintenance, all to be deducted before capital gains tax is calculated, which will reduce the amount payable. But overall, the effect is more negligible than it could have been if you'd aligned it with tax rates, as was the biggest fear. Now, of course, the big problem at the moment for many of us is that homeowners are facing the biggest rise in interest payments ever. And the new analysis shows that homeowners are facing the biggest mortgage payments ever, with thousands with a typical home loan seeing their monthly charges doubling next year to almost £500. And of course, here in London, it's much, much higher than that. The Lib Dem are saying homeowners are paying the price for the Conservative government crashing the economy. Wealthy Londoners are becoming accidental landlords. Well, we see this not just with wealthy Londoners, but all over the UK. And we're certainly seeing it here in the south of London, is that people are deciding to rent instead of sell because they're not confident in the sales market. Although at the moment, I have to say, we're very busy on the sales market. And therefore, they choose to rent out their home with a view to keeping it. And this is happening more and more. So the supply of upper end properties has increased significantly. Still, we find in the middle of the market, there's an undersupply, and this is pushing rents higher than ever. So apart from that, the rising cost of shared ownerships, this was an interesting one I saw in the Sunday Times. The poor shared ownership tenants have seen massive rises in their rents because they're linked to the rate of inflation. And the Sunday Times has done an article looking at how soaring rents and higher mortgage rates are adding thousands of pounds to the costs of living in shared ownership homes. With fears of a housing market crash and the risk of negative equity, many are also struggling to sell their homes because first-time buyers are putting their plans on hold. The problems come just as the government is providing £11.5 billion to housing associations and private companies to build 162,000 affordable homes, as much as half of which could be sold on a shared ownership basis. According to the University of York, above inflation rents means shared ownership homes can be much more expensive than buying outright after 15 years. And you can gradually buy more and more of a share of your home if you're in shared ownership. That is, if you have the funds available, of course. But that is really tough. And my heart goes out to you if you're finding yourself in that position where you thought you were protected and all of a sudden you're seeing these huge rent rises. Rent rises, by the way, are going on across the UK, and it's hardly surprising when any private landlords are seeing their mortgage rates triple or more, that the effect is that they need to defend their position by increasing rents. And tenants are being very good about it generally. I have to say what we're finding is they're understanding, but it's really, really tough at all ends of the market, both for landlords and tenants. It's not just the tenants that suffer, landlords as well. Many landlords are pensioners and rely on the income from the rental for their pension. Many have decided that pensions were a bit rubbish and they use their housing wealth to buy other properties and then use that monies to fund their day-to-day lives. And some of those are struggling because they're financed too. Now, the price, this is quite a good one. I thought this is all about the Lake District, Britain's loneliest house up for sale. Feel like being lonely? Well, this is a place you want. Skiddaw House, England's so-called loneliest house, is back on the market for a reported £10 million. You did hear that right. Well, the Lake District is a bit posh, as our friends at AJ Ashdown Jones Estate Agents will tell you. And that's along with 1,214 hectares of land, though, including three mountaintops. The first house came to market in 2021 and became one of Rightmove's most viewed properties. However, it failed to sell, with prospective buyers put off by its remoteness, which includes a four-mile mountain walk to the nearest pub. The property was empty in the 1970s, falling into disrepairs until it was converted in 1986 into what is now Britain's highest youth hostel. Andrew Wright, head of the Mitchells Land Agency, which is organising the sale, said it's one of the largest areas of Lake District National Park ever to be sold. Landlords are demanding guarantors. This is hardly surprising in the current climate, is it? Almost 15% of renters now require a guarantor when searching for a home, according to data from referencing company Goodlord. This is up from less than 12% last year. Requests for tenants to nominate another adult to pay their rent in the event of default was once reserved for students and those with poor credit ratings. But the need for a guarantor has become a must for many landlords during the cost of living crisis. Obviously, landlords are looking to protect their own interests, and understandably so. And when there's a broader selection of tenants out there, the addition of a guarantor can just be belt and braces and just helps landlords to feel reassured that they're most likely to receive their rents. The region with the highest rate was the Southwest, where around 30% of renters require a guarantor, up from 15% last year. Wow, it's the double. A fifth of tenants need a guarantor in Wales and North West, up from 16 and 18% respectively in 20 and 21. And the share of tenants requiring another person to guarantee their rent has risen in every region of England and Wales, apart from London, apparently. That was in the Daily Telegraph. Landlord sales likely following a crackdown. Well, we've seen some of these. This is because of the new tax allowances. Investors and second homeowners will face higher tax bills. But as we just said, that it's really not that significant for most people. I do think some people will choose to sell, though, not just for that reason. There are so many other reasons as well. And the stamp duty cut is to end in 2025. Now, this is significant if you are a first-time buyer, particularly. Jeremy Hunt has announced that the stamp duty cut announced by his predecessor, Kwasi Kwarteng's mini-budget, will remain in place, but only until 2025. In September, it was announced that the threshold at which stamp duty rates applies was lifted from £125,000 to £250,000, while the threshold for first-time buyers increased from £300,000 to £425,000. Now, that's really significant. I know it seems crazy here in London, but because London prices are so crazy, they do need that uplift in order to be able to take advantage. Many found themselves outside of the bracket because it was so low. Mr. Hunt said that he will sunset the measure as of March 31st, 2025, creating an incentive to support the housing market by boosting transactions during the period the economy most needs it. Richard Donnell of Zoopla said the reversal of changes signifies a real need to reform stamp duty, arguing that the levy is starting to resemble income tax, where it's the top tax bands generating the greatest receipts. Well, yes, we see that. Also, I think, you know, the idea, what we always find is that whenever they time a measure like this, what happens is that you end up creating a rush. And then if you're not careful, a boom. And then if you're not careful, a bust following that boom. So I never think these time limited deadlines are good for the market generally. Apart from that, getting colder here in London, many people are choosing to keep their heating off. And I know, you know, many people are thinking, what can we do? Should we go over to heat pumps? There are many reasons why you should do a heat pump if you can afford to get it in the first place. But realistically, for most of us, we can't really afford that heat pump. And even if we could, it's not appropriate for many types of property in the UK. Unless your home is really well insulated, it can be difficult to get a heat pump working because, you see, they do work on lower temperatures. So they do require that your home is designed to retain the heat. So there are other things you can do. I know a lot of people are concerned about the EPC rating C, which is going to be required of new tenancies from December 2025. We have had a feeling for a while that this will be watered down because there are so many rental properties that will fall outside of this bracket. I'm not sure it will now, though, because on the one hand, we have the energy crisis where landlords will be compelled by government, and it would be good government visibility for them to be seen to be improving the stock of rental homes in the private market. And the idea is that you need to spend up to $10,000 for energy saving measures. Now, how this will transpose itself into law has yet to be seen, but I can see why the government will need to be seen to be pushing this agenda for obvious reasons, both the green agenda on the one hand, and obviously to keep tenants' bills to a minimum in a really difficult market. Obviously, we've got Sadiq Khan pushing for rent controls, which I don't think are going to happen under this government. Will it happen under a Labour government? Yes, it possibly will. I could see them pushing through an agenda of rent controls, but I think it would be the most foolish thing they could possibly do, because just like with the housing associations where we're seeing rents rising by 15%, if we linked rent rises to RPI, then we'd actually see rents rising much more regularly over a much longer period of time, whereas at the moment, most landlords have tended to leave their tenants at their current rents for many years. Once you put in a mandatory rent allowance of increase period, then you cause problems. And also what you do is stifle the market, because obviously you will scare away existing people that are considering investing in buy-to-let. And there's enough disincentive out there at the moment. Section 24 being the biggest one in my view, and that was the taking away of a landlord's ability to deduct the interest payments from their expenses before paying their tax bill. And what this has meant for many landlords, particularly higher geared landlords, is that by the time they pay their mortgages and other expenses and then pay the tax bill, they're actually going into reverse, which is one of the reasons why we're seeing such an influx of properties coming to market from existing landlords. Many existing landlords in the UK are sitting on quite large gains, and they could see the tax breaks being reduced and the Section 24 lack of the interest payments being able to be offset as a reason to sell. Certainly something that we're seeing here in the southwest of London, where landlords have made a good profit, they're sitting on a healthy profit, and some are deciding that now is the time for them to withdraw. On the flip side of that, we are seeing some new investment, mostly from company lets. Of course, if you're a limited company, you still have the luxury of being able to offset those interest payments against your tax bill. And that's really significant because it makes a huge difference, especially to a medium-sized portfolio. Many smaller landlords have asked me, should we be looking to incorporate? And that depends on the size of your portfolio. There are various ways you can do it. Some will argue that you can actually transfer your properties into an LLP with no tax to be paid in terms of stamp duty. I'm not sure that that will be something that won't be looked at by the tax man or won't raise an eyebrow of the tax man later down the road. So that's a strategy that I don't personally recommend. Some of my landlords have consolidated by reducing their loans where they've got larger portfolios. They've decided to sell some of those and then retain the rest in cash so that they have less property, but the income relative to that portfolio is higher and they don't have to pay tax, putting them into a reverse situation. So this has led to many landlords reducing the size of their portfolio. For a new portfolio, I think a limited company is the way to go forwards. But for an existing landlord, it can be a bridge too far. You may be better off taking the profits from one of your buy-to-lets and consolidating that into another so that you reduce or remove the mortgage in another property. And then the rent you receive, you're receiving cash. And there you, therefore, you're only being taxed on money that you're actually earning, as opposed to money that you haven't had, which is the current system under the Section 24 rules. But of course, this is not financial advice. And if you do want financial advice, then please do listen to our edition with the wonderful Nicola McKenzie from DM Mortgages. She was on BBC last week, which was lovely to see. We get all the best guests here on the Property Buyer and Sellers podcast. So that's it for this week. Budget not as painful as we thought it might be. And glad it's out of the way. Bit of a sigh of relief, generally, frankly. Are we in for tough times ahead? Yeah, of course we are. We're in for a couple of years of tough times. Does that mean the property market will fall off a cliff? No, of course it doesn't. In our view, it's still business as usual. And what we'll find is that, yes, there'll be less transactions. But remember, sellers also mainly have the alternative of renting out their properties or choosing not to move. It's not just buyers that can control the market. If it was, then prices would already be through the floor. And similarly, it's not just sellers. The question is whether the sellers are forced to sell under the repossessions. And there are some new rules about that as well. The government has said that they will support mortgage holders with interest payments now. That's something else that came up in the small print of the budget. And I do think that that's quite significant too. That's not something, God forbid, we any of us want to be in that situation. But it does mean that some will be saved by that. And therefore, the level of repossessions in the UK, in my view, will be larger, but relative to the whole of the market, not as large as to cause market instability, especially now with the new government support that's in place. So thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this week's edition. We'll be back next week with another. Enjoy the football this week. Come on, England. Take care of yourselves and your families. Goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us on yet another edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. You can find out more at our website, jamesalexander.com. You can email me directly, ken@jamesalexander.com. We are estate agents and we can give you hints, tips, tricks and advice wherever you're buying, selling, moving to or from. Thanks to Ben Sounds for the intro and outro today, and thanks to Jack Bowles for production.